Welcome to out there on WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton, Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today's show is a continuation of last week's interview with Simbrit Paskins and Stephanie Mary Show, co-founders of 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. The recorder in the studio actually wasn't working for the beginning of this show either, and so I'm just recreating the first part at home. But it was from August 4th, 2020, and when Simbrit starts talking, she's talking about her work as a Holyoke High School teacher and how the school system is dealing with COVID and the start of school coming up this fall.
Oops, I mean, that was definitely...
If they have half days or something like that, they're still going to hang out with each other outside when they get out of school, high schoolers and stuff like that. What else? Parents are, yes, going have to go back to work because they're cutting the unemployment. So, like, now what are kids going to do? You know what I mean? There has something, some, if they want to take the unemployment away and parents have to go back to work, they need to figure some kind of space that's large enough to do social distance, childcare. Childcare is a huge issue. How many people are going to be losing their jobs because they have nobody to watch their kids? But also, it's not safe for the kids to go back to school. So something has to, like, I don't know. Wi-Fi in general. There's so many people who can't afford Wi-Fi. Like, They're struggling to feed their children, let alone having devices for them to do homework on and having Wi-Fi for them to use those devices on. So it's like they need to find money from somewhere to pay for people's Wi-Fi or pay for devices or something. But like to just put kids in danger because you don't want to figure out another way because you're so used to like this public school system that's been already failing people since forever. Like, that, it's selfish. Like, these kids are going to be at risk.
Also, like, standardized testing. Right now, it's still up in the air if for the 2020 to 2021 school year, it's up in the air whether or not students will have to do MCAS. And the testing, all of those things have already shown that those tests are, like, not conducive to, like, where students are at in their learning. And in their education. So I just feel like they need to, like, make them null and void. The fact that the state is even, like, wasting time debating that is, like, terrifying because that could mean that they could implement it for the spring. They're just so, like, you know, one of the... I was reading the Massachusetts Teacher Association suggestions for, like, phased reopening. And one of the biggest suggestions was to give teachers... So basically delay the opening. Instead of school starting August 28th, let it start in the middle of September. Like, there's no rush to this. If you say that it's about the well-being of the students and your employees, and you say that you want your students to have, like, quality education, give us time to build that. It's not our fault that they waited. They're going to wait till, like, August 10th to announce their reopening plan and then try to start school on August 28th. And so one of the suggestions from MTA was to delay the school opening and give teachers an extra 2 weeks on top of whatever plan time was going to be for regular PD to plan how we are going to teach our students and engage them in the new ways of being with one another in the space. So no real academics, just like, this is how we're going to show each other that, like, we're supporting each other right now. This is how we're going to do the bathroom, and I know it sucks, but, like, let's practice it. And, like, this is how we're going to have to clean up after ourselves. This is what you're going to do if you're feeling like you need a safe place because it's not the same as last year. Like, all of those things. So we make a plan, and then you phase students in based on that plan. And the first 2 weeks after they start back school, there's no academics either. It's just, like, teaching them the plan and just, like, engaging and building community. And then after maybe that month, so maybe, like, mid-October is when you're starting academics. Because now we all have an understanding. We've given ourselves time. And that's, like, in a dream world. But I feel like, gosh, if there was ever a time that we needed a dream school world, it would be now.
Yeah.
So,
how did you become a teacher?
By force. No, I'm just kidding. So I met Dana Altshuler, who is the director of ethnic studies at Holyoke High, now. And I met her because I went to Westfield State and I studied ethnic and gender studies as a major. And it was the most, like, I think, like, life-changing experience that I've had one of them. Mm-hmm. I always tell people that, like, I was going to drop out of college. Mm-hmm. It was my second semester, first year, and I had already, like, signed up to be a Coast Guard Reserve. I was going to just drop out. It just felt like it wasn't for me. I had had certain experiences on a predominantly white campus. And then I ran into Professor Margot Hennessy, who lives in East Hampton. She probably might kill me for saying her name on here. but she's one of the most beautiful people that I know. And she was in, like, this building, and I ran into her, and she was just like, hi. And I was like, hi. It's like when, you know, as a person of color, we go to white spaces all the time and nobody ever says a word to you. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like that. And so I was surprised by her saying hi to me. And she said, what's your name? And I said, Simbrit Paskins. And she quickly invited me over to a building called Maud Hall, which ironically enough was like all the way on the other side of campus, away from everything. And she said that I could sit in on an ethnic and gender studies class. And it, like, it's not a big deal. No one would care. Like, I could just come sit in. So I did that day, later that day. And that in that class, I learned that Christopher Columbus didn't discover America. And I was 18. And up until that point, I had never knew that. I don't know.
She's discovering something.
Something, I hope. But yeah, it was crazy. So the next day I dropped my communications major and I picked up ethnic and gender studies. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I started taking those classes. I started learning in ethnic and gender studies. Was the first time that I learned that there were black and queer female authors. I had never known that. So I discovered Audre Lorde and like so many others. Mm-hmm. Even just the style of class and the way that, like, what we were learning and how we were learning was informed by, like, all of my peers at the time in that space was something that I wanted to be a part of. And it's the only reason that I stayed in college. It's the only reason that I graduated. And that's how I got into youth development work, because I thought, like, we used to always ask ourselves, like, how do you, this feeling that we have within this cohort of, like, ethnic and gender studies people, how do we replicate that when we graduate? Because it felt safe, finally. It felt like home and family. We used to always say, my people who are not my people, right? And so that's how I got into youth development work, and just wanting to constantly, like, give back and make young people feel how I felt, in hopes that essentially, like, they didn't have to wait to college to learn what I learned. Mm-hmm. Or they didn't have to go to college at all to learn what I learned. And, like, all of the empowerment stuff, like, that's, I tend to be a very quiet person. I tend to be, like, very introverted, and that, like, helped me to, like, find my voice. There were just so many, find my, like, leadership and, like, my value. There were so many things that, like, made it amazing for me. And so I'd been doing youth development work, and so Margot, my professor, was like, we need alum to come back to Westfield State because these students from Holyoke High Ethnic Studies program are going to be coming, and we want them to, like, meet with you guys and talk about, like, what they can do if they continue on this journey of, like, ethnic studies. And so I went for a day. I, like, took the day off from work, like, months in advance. I didn't care that I wasn't getting paid. And I went to the event, and I met Dana. Up until that point, I didn't know that Holyoke High or anywhere in Western Mass even had an ethnic studies program in the K-12 level. That's actually really rare. So Holyoke High is, like, really ahead of the curve in this region for, like, anti-racist curriculum in schools. And yeah, I worked with some of the kids, and, like, later that day I talked to Dana, and she was like, we have this position, and, like, I would love for you to apply. And so I went through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to someone the other day about when you interview for ethnic studies, you also interview with the students. Mm-hmm. So you do a mock lesson where you go into their classroom and they give your potential employers feedback on how you did as an, like, did they like you? What did they like that you did? What did they not like? And whatever. So they're a part of the, like, hiring process. And something that was interesting is that Holyoke High, I remember when I went for the interview, like, none of the kids had uniform. Up until that point, I had always attended a school where you had to wear uniform, or I had worked within a school where you had to wear uniform. And so I was, like, baffled at the fact that they weren't wearing uniform and they had art on the walls. It didn't look like a prison, which is something very different to a lot of our Springfield schools, and that they had ethnic studies. So I went for the interview, and I told them that the only reason I was in the interview was because they had an ethnic studies program, and I never wanted to be a teacher. And I had been, like, jumping through loops and hoops trying to avoid being a teacher, even though that's, like, that had always been the recommendation from other people, because when you work with young people, the assumption is you should just teach. And I had realized that, like, I was an educator, just not a formal teacher in the sense of the word. And because it was ethnic studies, I was told by some folks who were not invited back to teach ethnic studies, there were two teachers of color, in Holyoke public schools, one in the high school, one in the middle school, who I went to school with, actually, and like really respected. They were not asked back their second year, and they were both ethnic studies teachers. They were both women of color. And I sat down with them before I took the position to say, like, give me the scoop. Like, what's going on? Like, should I do this? Because look at what's happening. Like, you go in one year and as a woman of color, and you, like, you don't make it to your second year. Mm-hmm. And they were like, if anyone's going to take the job, we want it to be you. And that was it. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, all right, if they can't do it because they didn't get asked back over lots of BS, then, like, it should be me. So I just figured I'd take the risk. So it wasn't planned. It wasn't a part of my plan at all.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. This is an interview with Simbrit Paskins and Stephanie Merishow, co-founders of 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active, the Facebook group.
That is, the description of that is, so you made it to a Black Lives Matter march or demonstration and want to know more about how, when, and where you can get involved in the movement for Black Lives in the 413 area. This page is for you. 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active was founded on June 2nd, 2020 in response to the public and shameless murder of George Floyd and countless other black lives by the hands of the police. Our values align with that of the national Black Lives Matter movement, and our goal is to fight for the liberation of black people and for the elimination of systemic white supremacy. This organization was founded by the community for the community. We prioritize black leadership and work together with our allies to speak out, stand up, and dismantle the systems of oppression that have plagued our people for far too long. Through the careful organization of protests, marches, and other local actions for black lives, our hope is to continue to grow as a network and a resource for the community. We are committed to providing continuous opportunities for BIPOC, black, indigenous, people of color, and allies to learn, collaborate, volunteer, and change not only ourselves, but the world. So you can go to that Facebook, 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. I got more of the interview with Stephanie and Simbrit coming up after a couple songs. Here's some James Brown. Thank you.
I've been low, I've been high, I've been sold all my lies. I've got nothing left to play, I've got nothing left to say. I'm a black man in a white world, I'm a black man in a white world, I'm a black man in a white world, I'm a black man in a white. I'm in love, but I'm still sad. I found peace, but I'm not glad. All my nights and all my days, I've been trying the wrong way. I'm a black man in a white world, I'm a black man in a white world, I'm a black man in a white world, I'm a black man in a white world. I feel like I've been here before, I feel that knocking on my door. I feel like I've been here before, I feel that knocking on my door. And I've lost everything I had. I'm a black man in a white world. 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 I'm a black man in a white world.
I've been low and I've been high. I've been sold.
Welcome to Out There. That was Michael Kiwanuka. Now back to the interview with Stephanie and Simbrit. Simbrit Paskins and Stephanie Marichaux, co-founders of the Facebook group 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. This interview is from Monday, July. Well, it was from last Monday. Not yesterday, but a week ago yesterday. The calendar only has August on it, and I'm having trouble envisioning the days. Counting backwards.
I did 3 ethnic studies classes and 2 traditional English classes. Mm-hmm. And I loved them. My traditional English class was 11th grade. I loved them because 11th graders are just super cute. Mm-hmm. Like humans. But the feeling was always so different. Like teaching ethnic studies does something for the teacher too that other teachers in traditional like classes don't get to experience. So I always talk about like moments where I wanted to do, have you heard of the restorative justice like circles?
Yeah.
That people do? I wanted to do that. I'd kind of seen it, but I had no clue how to facilitate it. So I tried to do it in my biggest, loudest, most challenging class.
Uh-huh.
And it totally failed. We were all disappointed. Uh-huh. And that's one of the things, like being able to laugh at yourself and be like, all right, guys, I messed this one up. And one of my students who was in that class was a peer leader through ethnic studies and through the Palante Restorative Justice Program. And she was like, Miss, if you want, like, I could, like, come back and show you how to do this. So she, like, during lunch, she ate her lunch quickly, and she talked to her last three period teachers and told them, like, what she wanted to do, and they gave her permission. So for the last three periods of the day, she stayed in the class. I sat down at a desk and, like, kept time, and she, like, facilitated these circles so that we could process some work that we had been doing. And, like, that's my favorite experience. And that was just before COVID hit. So it was just, like, this moment and then, like, COVID.
Yeah. That was a nice, like, going out gift to deal with the world.
Yeah, it was awesome. And that same young lady, Kiara Krogan, I'm hyping her up because she's amazing and you all are going to hear about her. That same student spoke at the 1,000-plus person march in Holyoke without fear, without a doubt, without hesitation. I mean, like, the night before, I was like, Kiara, are you, like, do you need anything? Are you good? And she was like, no, miss, I'll send you my speech in the morning. Like, it's good. And she, like, showed up and took the mic and shared her truth. You know what I mean? And, like, Steph and I are always talking about, imagine if we could help young people to be that way from when they're, like, 10 years old.
Yeah.
You know, like, what does a brown, empowered, like, 10-year-old look like if that's what a 16-year-old could look like through ethnic studies, anti-racist education? What does a community of people who are in their, like, you know, age 35 to, like, 55, what do those people look like if we tell them, like, it's not too late? Like, you can still have this education, too. You can still, like, be empowered in this way, too. So
that ties into, like, what we want to do.
Exactly.
That ties into, like, 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. It's getting it. It's giving it to people, you know, not just only if you're in an ethics studies program. Right. But, like, this should be, like, something that people can get just in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what age you are, like, people deserve to have that sense of family. They deserve to feel like they're heard. They deserve to learn about their history. They deserve to feel like they are empowered. And it's honestly, it's so much like ethnic studies. It's so much, the practice of ethnic studies is, like, so mixed into how we're, like, running 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. Mm-hmm. As you're talking, I'm like, wow, this is kind of like just what we want to do.
Yeah,
because you're never too old or too young or too anything to start.
Do you want to share more, Stephanie, about your journey? Your like, how you got?
Yeah, lots of stuff.
How you felt more empowered or got involved?
I don't know. I'm not used to talking about myself. I guess. I mean, I've always been, like, a very vocal person. I've always been very, like, my mom has really taught me to, like, advocate for myself and for the people I care about. I think I've seen a little bit of this in myself, like, all throughout life. I never knew that I would, like, end up being, like, an organizer and, like, trying to, like, end racism. But, yeah, I don't know. I think just I've had a lot of experiences where I've met so many different people. I've met people from many different countries, many different walks of life, backgrounds, class, all that stuff. And, like, I genuinely, like, my whole life, I've just been a person that, like, just love people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if, you know, it may seem as though, like, even, like, the worst of people, like, you know, you still love them just because they're humans. Like, a lot of us are products of our own environment, and it's not always our fault. Our behavior is not always our fault. But our failure to, like, address our behavior is our fault. You know what I mean? So I just always give people benefit of the doubt. And, so I think throughout life, like, if you look at my old Facebook statuses and stuff like that, or just conversations that I've had, people always tell me I like to debate. I don't think I like to debate. I just feel like when something's right and it's, like, for humans or something, like, I just won't back down. Like, if I'm defending something that's right. So it's kind of weird to see, like, my process of life and how I've kind of always just been this person that, like, stands, like, you know, I come from, like, every bit of marginalized group you can think of. Like, I'm a lesbian, I'm black, I'm a woman, whatever else. And I've always stuck up for every part of me and in others. So I think my life has always just been me interacting and meeting people that I grow to love, that society's told me not to love. Society's told me, this person's not normal, this person's not this, this person's not that, but then I meet them and I'm like, wait, they're great, what do you mean? So I think it's kind of driven my passion to, like, kind of speak for the underdog, even though I am an underdog. Speak for the underdog, give them a voice. And, you know, right now, you know, we're focusing on Black lives. Like, you know, like I was starting to say on my Facebook people are like, oh, you're always arguing on Facebook. I'm like, no. But if I see somebody saying something really homophobic, I'm going to step in there. If I see somebody saying something really racist, I'm going to step in there. And I get blocked a lot on Facebook. I like count them up now. But yeah, so it's all kind of tying into my work now. But now it's just like on a bigger scale. So it's like Black people need help. They always have. Right now there's a movement for it. And it's like, this is what I have to do now. But like, I've always seen, like, even I've always worked with youth. I've done some teaching, and I've been a nanny, and I work with adults with disabilities. And like, you know, the same way people with disabilities, you know, they need people to stand up for them. Children need people to stand up for them. Black people need people to stand up for them. Like that's just been a part of who I've been and what I do. You know what I mean? I put myself in a position where I can give access, you know what I mean? Or I can open that door, or I can raise that awareness. So yeah, I don't have, I'm not a, I wouldn't call myself a teacher, but just as a musician, as a person who works with youth, as a person who just works with people, it just looks like my whole life kind of led up to me learning to love people enough to like do whatever it takes to make sure that everybody else loves them too, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I didn't know where I was going with that, but it kind
of... No, that's great. You know, I think that's part of one other thing I wanted to sort of touch on and reiterate that you all said was when you were talking about self-care, just emphasizing the importance of just love for one another and how that sustains us. Like, you know, we have all these cerebral, you know, things about how the system is messed up and we got to change things, but feeling love and connection between one another is huge. I've also been thinking about, like, so I've heard a lot of criticisms lately of, like, Black Lives Matter and the protests, and there's, I've heard, like, criticisms, like, the Black Lives Matter activists are just too harsh.
It's like, the people don't even know.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I heard we're pushing the gay agenda.
All kinds of accusations.
I recently heard that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, none of that's true to my experience of any of the protests or anything I've been in. Well, minimal. You know, there's always some faction of this, that, or the other. But the underlying core is just, like, trying to work together and care about each other.
Yeah. I think that comes from just fear. So racism comes from, you know, trying to protect white supremacy, or trying to protect the power that that people have. If you know that you have done everyone dirty, if you know that you have stolen land from indigenous people, stolen humans from their land and brought them here to build the land that you now call yours, and enslaved them and beat them and did everything else to them, there's always going to be some weird, like, paranoia that, like, everybody's going to rise up and, like, take this power that you stole in the first place. Anyway, but so that us being called terrorists and, you know, what, we're, like, not, we're, like, anti, like, we're, like, against God. We're, like, godless people. And
we're
anti-everything.
We're just, you know.
we're like demons, I guess, in their eyes. That all comes from fear. We are not saying, down with white people, let's enslave them. And we're saying, like, hey, can we just have a little bit of that? Like, can we have a little bit of what we built? You know, and there's nothing wrong with asking for your right.
I think that was the end of that clip. You may have heard some beeping. I accidentally bumped the computer with my knee when I was moving the chair around the studio. And that seems to have ejected my device with the clips on it. All right, so I guess then let me play some music. This is a Stand Up, the official lyric video by Cynthia Erivo.
Where is she?
Come on back, peaceful.
Whoa, easy now.
I'm gonna be free or die.
I've been walking with my face turned to the sun. Weight on my shoulders, a bullet in my gun.
Oh, I got eyes in the back of my head, just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can while I can for my people, while the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night. That's when I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom calling, calling me to answer? Gonna keep on keeping on, I can feel it.
I've made it 100 miles to freedom. Would you like to pick a new name to mark your freedom?
Paratum.
Early in the morning, before the sun begins to shine, we're gonna start moving towards that separating. Salvation, and I'll fight with the strength that I got until I die. So I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom calling, calling me to answer? Gonna keep on keeping on.
Harriet, welcome to the Underground Railroad.
A stand-up performed by Cynthia Erivo from the movie Harriet. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I have a few, like 10 more minutes of the interview with Stephanie Maryshow and Simbrit Paskins, co-founders of the Facebook group 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active. And let's see, Out There airs every Tuesday from 3 until 4. Now, actually, August is my last month because I think I'm going to be leaving in September. Who knows how COVID will do. But the Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project, the bikes are actually, I'm scheduling to ship them on Labor Day weekend. Yeah, so if you want to help load bicycles into a shipping container sometime on that weekend, let me know. You can go to the Pedal People website and look under Bike Lab. Or you can just do a look for Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project. And you'll find my contact information. And anyway, so I'm going to be doing this show for the rest of the month and then shipping bikes. And even though the borders are still closed in Trinidad, I think I may... Well, the borders in Kentucky at Woodring Mountain at my family's place have been slightly opened a crack for me, says my dad and my brother and sister-in-law, as long as I carefully quarantine. So anyway, yeah, so out there, I was going to stop for the season, I guess, come end of August. Those are my plans. Madness Radio comes up at 4, every Tuesday at 4, followed by Democracy Now! At 5. Thanks for listening today, and here is Simrit and Stephanie.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with just asking for what we are supposed to have. And I think Black people, our behavior is always just judged super harshly. When you think about it, who are the ones that are showing up? What are the militias like that are showing up? It's like the Trump supporters that are racist, they're showing up with guns and AR-15s, and they're the ones like standing out, you know, like being threatening and yelling and calling names and stuff like that. We're saying Black Lives Matter, and they're like, you know, let's hang these people. And then, like, in reality, it's like everything they're doing, they're like, they're calling it about us. And I'm like, no, like, you're literally doing, it's like gaslighting to the max. So yeah, I really truly believe that, like, they know the truth. They know that we are not terrorists. They know that we're not doing anything that's wrong. But it's the same way that a Black person, you know, uses slang or something, and all of a sudden they're, I hate this word, ghetto, or whatever else, because they don't talk like this. Or, you know, I see white kids riding skateboards with their pants hanging down all the time, but when a Black guy does it, he's a thug, you know, like, so, you know, there are so many, the Women's March, and there's, like, these huge, like, marches and stuff like that, that it's fine. But anything that a Black person does is 100 times worse in the eyes of a racist person. And so, yeah, it's just unfortunate that just by asking for, you know, they praise, like, what, the Boston Tea Party. Like, that's something that's so celebrated. Like, yeah. And I'm like, that was a protest.
And they went and they took it and they dumped it over. The product was ruined and they got what they wanted.
They destroyed property. And
people were harmed in the process.
And that's something that's celebrated in America. You know? But we, most of the time, for the people, there's not been one riot in Massachusetts. And no matter how peaceful we are, we are always going to be demonized, and because we're Black, our skin color is so offensive to people. I don't understand why, but everybody keeps telling me, you're too radical. Martin Luther King wouldn't approve of this. I'm like, Martin Luther King, first of all, you're white, don't put words in his mouth. Secondly, he was the most peaceful person ever, and guess what happened to him? He was still murdered. So no matter what we do, whether we are Malcolm or Martin, we're always wrong. And so in that case, we might as well just do it however we want to. And like, at this point, we don't care what they think about us.
One of my like favorite quotes is Audre Lorde, where she says, like, you know, my silences have not protected me, your silences will not protect you. Like, that is literally one of the quotes that I go back to when we're getting ready for an action. Because I have been known to be really quiet and meek and just like introverted into myself. And people still treat you, like, people treat you the way that you allow them to treat you. And so this movement is Black people and people of color, not just, like, nationwide, but worldwide, are saying, like, Black Lives Matter. And until you get that and show us that you understand that with policy changes and with your actions, then not only are we not letting up, but, like, you're going to get a taste of your own medicine. And that doesn't have to mean that, like, someone's being violently threatened, or that, you know, that someone's going to get hurt or something's going to get burned down, but it could. And who is anyone who is not fighting to change the system to tell those people that they shouldn't? You know, it was the same sentiment that was happening in Minneapolis when people were burning things down and breaking the glass on Target and that sort of thing. Like, we have a chant that we always say, if we don't get it, shut it down. And so this month, shutting it down means that while all these parents are keeping their kids home for school, that we are, like, we have a network of Black and Brown educators who are educating our kids homeschool. Bam. You know what I mean? Like, and next month, shutting it down could mean that people are walking out of their jobs on strike, right? And the month after, it could mean that just before Christmas, nobody's going to go shopping unless you're buying from a Black-owned business. Mm-hmm. Like, if we don't get it, shut it down. And that's what that means. Mm-hmm. And I feel that this is that moment. And I don't think that people are letting up. And I see that from, like, multiple ways. Like, countries that have never... I mean, you've been to Trinidad. Both of our families come from Trinidad. Mm-hmm. Trinidad is a place where a lot of people our complexion and darker would never say, I'm Black. Because there's a very there's a huge difference. My aunt used to always say, we're not so racial. And then, she, you know, we talk about how colonialism and colorism and all that stuff is real. But, like, most Trinidadians don't even identify as Black. But with this movement are saying Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So in places like East Hampton and Northampton that are seen to be super liberal, but even places like Southampton and Palmer, and we were in Williamsburg yesterday where there are people doing standouts on the street corners with signs that say Black Lives Matter.
Right.
Like me, Simbrit, I don't know, you know, what they feel in their hearts or what they practice at home or what they teach their children, but I do know that, like, driving through Williamsburg, Massachusetts, and, like, seeing, we were already holding our breath because we just want to get to some water, and all the nice water places are in these, like, rural areas that are mostly white, but to see them, like, standing on the corner with the signs was like a breath of fresh air. I never understood how impactful standouts could be until yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
So I think to hell with the people who with the people who are spinning the narrative in any other way besides the fact that Black people and people of color are, like, out here trying to get liberation. You know, we don't want a piece of the pie, and we don't want your crumbs. We want the whole pie because we baked it anyway. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? So that's what it
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Honestly, there's nothing violent or nothing hateful about us. We are not Black supremacists, which doesn't even sound right. That sounds
it's
crazy.
A joke.
That,
like,
sounds
what?
Insane. But it's not about Black supremacy. It's not about we want to take this back. And it's, we never had it in the first place. But it's... Honestly, it's we're the most loving movement. Like, we literally... We love humans enough to try to get justice. You know what I mean? The fact that when you look at the Black Lives Matter movement and how they say we are queer affirming, we are trans affirming, we are, like, they are so inclusive about women and LGBTQ community and all that stuff. I'm like, how could this be considered a hate group or a terrorist group? Like, literally, who are the ones that are rejecting the LGBTQ community? It's the freaking conservative, white, racist, like, Trump supporters. Like, that's hate. Like, it's hate to just reject somebody or treat somebody terribly because of what they were born to be. Whether it be women, whether it be Black, whether it be trans, whether it be gay, whatever. Like, it's the most loving movement. We're saying we love Black people enough to stand up for them and get them what they want. And we, like, and honestly, it's like, letting people know, like, we deserve love too. Like, it's really, honestly, a very loving movement. And yeah, when people aren't doing what we ask, you know, if you're not going to give it to us, yeah, we might have to take it. That's it's been 400 years. So at some point, something's got to give. And so either give it to us or we'll take it. Like, that's, and it's not like, I don't know, there's enough for everyone.
Right.
There's enough for everyone.
COVID has shown us that. Like, we were talking about that driving to Williamsburg, and we're saying, we passed by, like, two colleges, and I was like, I was thinking about how the colleges are probably super fearful that things don't open up again, because how are they going to get their money? Mm-hmm. But the fact that they have enough to function without, with, like, little to no income for a year and a half, tells us how, like, how much, like, money and, like, capitalism has really, like, run this society. And these are all things that we knew, but it just, I think COVID has really brought a lot of that to the surface. So it's like, on one breath, you can't tell me that, like, there's not an issue with the fact that most students, like, statistically, who go to college are white, when in our, like, system, most of the young people who should be going to college, if that's what they wanted to do, like, are of color. That doesn't make sense that we have mostly predominantly white institutions. and that you don't have money to make education more accessible and more equitable, but you have enough money to function. With all of these buildings, some of them have like these large campuses, you have enough money to function and to pay the people who are working there and to pay the president, who probably isn't doing much of anything, like, to function for a year and a half, mm-hmm. but you can't like make education equitable and accessible or free, you know, like yeah. what?
That's so. That's the thing too. It's like a fear of losing something that you have an overabundance of.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
like, it's not like, oh, we're already, we only have crumbs and like you can't take some of our crumbs. It's like, we have a whole bakery and you're just asking for half of a cookie. Like, mm-hmm. you know, example, Jeff Bezos, right? What, $189 billion is his net worth. He, you know, the fact that like people think that hard work equals equals success or equals, you know, being rich, it's not mm-hmm. true. You can have a really great idea, throw it off to a couple of people, get a small loan of $1 million from your dad, like Trump says, and you can pay people to do the work for you, and then you get to be the CEO. I think I was reading that you have to work 70,000 years in order to, by what we make, yeah. we have to work about 70,000 years to get what Jeff Bezos has.
That's
not. Just gotta work a little longer. Right.
So talk about like generational think about that, wealth. Think about that though. Yeah. He didn't work 70,000 years.
Yeah. Right.
So that's not connected to his hard work. It's connected yeah. to the exploitation of people. You know, for the fact that he has that much money, but his workers have to have 2-3 jobs and, you know, whatever else. It's that same sense of, like, he could easily end world hunger with $20 billion and have an easy, what, $160 billion left? It's that idea of, like, I have so much of this. Like, white people have so much power and so much of everything and aren't willing to give a piece of it. And so, instead of them looking bad, it's everybody else is bad for asking for this. Mm-hmm. What Bezos has is literally stolen from the hard workers. You know what I'm saying? Like that whole, and it's just a, that's just like a metaphor or like an example of like this large scale like mm-hmm. white supremacy. Yeah. If you have more than enough, he will never be able to spend that right. that money in his lifetime. The white people of America or of the world would never be able to even utilize their privilege fully because it's just so much of it that it's just like overwhelming. Like you to just get away with anything. Or just you have so much resources, but it's like this fear of like not having them because you're so used to having them so that everybody else is bad for wanting some for themselves. Like, I don't know. It just, like, racks my brain. And But, yeah, so we're not hateful. We're very loving, and we just, we love ourselves enough to ask for what we need.
That was Stephanie Mary Show and Simbrit Paskins, co-founders of the Facebook group 413 Stay Woke, Stay Active, which is a group that can connect you with ways to get involved in the movement for Black Lives in the 413 area. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. And this is Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Madness Radio comes up at 4 o'clock. A couple other announcements I want to make. Well, if you're going to be around somewhere, anywhere where you can be a poll worker, democracy needs you. People need, we need poll workers. If you're in good health and can take the risk, the city of Northampton is hiring people. I'm about positive it's paid. I submitted an application. I'm pretty sure they said it's paid. You can go to the city's website, I think, to figure out how to apply for that. They need poll workers for September 1st for the primaries, to the best of my knowledge, as well as for November. I imagine a lot of people will be doing the mail-in ballots, but there'll still be some in-person stuff going on. And poll workers are important so people don't have to wait in long lines and get discouraged from voting. Also, the Northampton Policing Review Commission is looking for members. This commission was formed at the time that the Northampton City Council voted to reduce the police budget back in June. So this commission, well, they need people who are interested in trying to figure out how to apply and implement. Studies have been done. There's been lots of these commissions over the years, different places, but this is the first time in Northampton. So we know a lot of what needs to happen. It's just how to specifically implement it in Northampton to make good changes. So if you're not too cynical, please apply. This is a chance for some modicum of reform. You can go to the City of Northampton's website for more information. You can just look up Northampton Policing Review Commission. That's what I did a web search on, and voila, it popped up right there. There's also a version in Spanish. And what else do I have? What, today is Tuesday. That means the Tuesday Farmers Market is going on in downtown Northampton. Also, tomorrow being Wednesday means the Florence Farmers Market is happening right here in Florence. I'm sure there's more announcements to make. Oh, yeah. All right. So every Saturday from 11:30 to 2 or 3, please come to the Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue if you need help fixing a bike, or if you want to help someone else fix a bike, or if you want to help me fix a lot of bikes to be sent to Trinidad. More information on the Pedal People website under Bike Lab. That's every Saturday from 11:30 to 2 or 3. I stay as late as there's people and bikes there. But if you come at 1:45, I'm going to be annoyed because the official closing time is 2. If you come at noon and your project is still going on at 2, we'll stay till it takes as long as it takes or until someone gets really hungry. And here's Nina Simone.